All right, everybody. I think we'll try to get started. You can keep the doors open if you want. We'd love to have other folks come in for the next couple of minutes. But thank you all for being here. Hopefully we'll have some more folks join us because we think this is going to be one of the best panels that you're going to be at for South By. So welcome to Bridging the Digital and the Divine. My name is Dan Paulus, and I'm Vice President of Communications at Interfaith Youth Corps. We're based in Chicago. But for the purpose of this session, I also happen to be a co-host of an interfaith talk show on the PBS outlet in Chicago. So I'm going to be wearing that hat as the interviewer moderator today. And it's really my pleasure to speak with these folks that I've had the opportunity to work with, some very closely and some in other collaborative actions and so forth. And we hope this conversation is going to be certainly interesting and surprising. Some of you know us very well. We see friends out there from our Dicharya audience and other folks. So welcome to all of you. I want to, just in the few folks we have, really quickly, give me a sense of who is with us. How many in the journalism space? Can you yourself that? Okay, how about agencies? Yes, yes, all right. Brands or marketing? Couple. And then nonprofits? Anybody else? All right, good mix. Really quickly to expand on what this panel is about and why we chose to come here and present. We all feel we work in a really interesting and dynamic space, this faith space, and the landscape is just really provocative on a daily basis. There's polls that show that up to 80% of people consider themselves religious or spiritual in this country, so that's a reality that I think we all live with, but we tend to compartmentalize that reality as we go about our daily lives, especially as we apply that to our digital work and our communications work. So we want to unpack that a little bit for you all, and then also there's a ton of intersections of faith and politics and faith and culture that we all live with every day, and we just think it's a very, very interesting area to be in. And all these folks approach it in their own unique way, so I'm really interested to have them share their insights with you all. To give you a sense of who they are, they put together a really short video that kind of gives you the vibe and the tone of how they work with their audiences. So we're going to kick off with that video, and then we are going to have them introduce themselves briefly. And our hope is that you get journalistic, social, and design aspects out of this presentation. That was our goal in putting this together. So I'm going to move forward with the video. Great. I'm going to now start with each of the panelists to ask you to give us about 15 to 30 seconds of who you are, where you work, and how you're connected to this conversation today. I'll start with you down there, Paul, at the end.
Nice. Hey, James, glad I'm going first.
Hi, my name is Paul Drohan. I am the Senior Creative Director at Dicharya. And the reason why I'm here is because I was overseeing and actually working very personally with the IFYC group. From start to finish, doing everything, helping out with the strategy and the research, and the actual execution. So that's the reason why I'm here. There you go.
Adrian?
So I'm Adrian Baker. I am the online communications manager at Interfaith Youth Corps. So we keep saying Interfaith Youth Corps. For those of you who don't know what it is, we're an organization that tries to bring students and campuses together across lines of religious and non-religious difference to engage and act around a community issue, so to solve a community issue. We really want students to be able to voice their values, know where they're coming from, engage with others, understanding the differences and the similarities between their backgrounds, whether that's an atheist background or a religious background, and to act. So again, to address those issues in the community. I am responsible for the social media strategy, brand management, and web content at IFYC.
Great. Patton?
My name is Patton Dodd, and I'm the executive editor at Pathios.com. Pathios is a world religions website. It's a little over 2 years old. It features a world religions library that's peer-reviewed and provides overviews of different religious traditions. And then we also just have we have transitioned from that, or I guess I should say that's our foundation. But on top of that, we have also built a rich media site. So we have a Muslim channel, an evangelical channel, a Buddhist channel, an atheist humanist channel, and so on. And so our mission is to just host the conversation about religion as it's happening day in and day out.
Matt?
And I'm Matt Tombers, and I'm from Odyssey Networks, which is the world's largest interfaith / multi-faith organization. We represent, in among our members, we have Christians, Jews, Muslims, Baha'is, Buddhists, Hindus. If you are from a faith tradition and are using media to build bridges of understanding between people, you can be a member of Odyssey. My particular responsibility there, and the reason that I'm here today, is that I'm responsible for building platforms for us so that we can get our messages and the messages of our members out to the world, including mobile, web, etc.
Thanks, everybody. So we're such a small group. We've got six key questions that we're going to dive into, but I'd love to make this as interactive as possible as well. So if you have a really burning question that can't wait, let me know, and we'll get you to the mic. The goal is to get through some of this and unpack it and then have the time at the end to do that as well, okay? We're going to start with an infographic that kind of makes the case that I spoke to about the overall perspective and the landscape we're in. We thought this captured it in an interesting way, and at the bottom right-hand corner there, you see religious Americans use technology as much as non-religious ones was the thing that really jumped out at us. So we thought this was an interesting platform to speak to from this panel in terms of how digital is interacting and how it needs to interact to be effective in the faith space. I'm going to start with the big umbrella question with Patton. Why is the faith space important to really everyone, or not? Love for you to get into how you're working with different religious denominations and a little bit of audience segmentation and how that interplay works on the Pathios side.
Sure. So my background is both in religion journalism and in religious studies as an academic. In both those communities, there's always this sort of ongoing concern about how undercovered the religious stories are and religious conversations are in the press, how little representation there is, except for the sort of reporting that's done on the hard ideological stories. And so I've been working in the space, in the media space, for a number of years at BeliefNet and as a journalist for a variety of newspapers and websites. And one of the things that you find over and over again and over again that people don't really realize, even though it's sort of almost so obvious that it's not worth stating, is that religious people are everywhere. Like, they don't live in silos. They don't just function as religious people. They also function as sort of everyday normal people. And their lives are just imbued with their spirituality in maybe a more pronounced way. This is definitely true, not just anecdotally, but sociologically. The work of people like Alan Wolf and Robert Wuthnow, some prominent political scientists and social scientists, have shown that, religious people are sort of like, just like everyone else. They even like areas of the country that we might think of as rigidly conservative in their religious persuasion also sort of consume, desperate housewives just like everyone else does. And so one reason that religion media is important is that it's just part of the fabric of everyone's lives. Especially for people, even for people who self-identify as religious and who make that kind of the very core of their being and of who they are, that doesn't mean that that's all they are, right? It's sort of an aspect of the way that they live their lives. The other thing is that religions have a long, contra the sort of notion that religious people are maybe resistant to change and to development, especially like in technology, this just simply isn't true. From Gutenberg forward, religious people have really embraced technological change and media. A lot of early filmmaking, some of the very first films that were made were passion plays, and early radio plays, early television and internet activity. A lot of that, a lot of important things have been pioneered by people who were doing it for religious reasons. This is even true as think about social media, and Peter Thiel, one of the main investors in Facebook, is a man who says that his investment decisions, PayPal, Facebook, and other stuff that he's done, is guided in part by his Christian conviction his reading of this Christian anthropologist named René Girard. In any event, religion is very much kind of a part of sort of every conversation that's happening. And so we just believe sort of fundamentally that religion ought to be paid attention to and taken seriously by people who are working in this space, because it's such a huge aspect of so many people's lives.
So when we say religion, one of the challenges of working in this space is the language that different organizations use. And I want Matt to speak to that a little bit. What is interfaith and what is multifaith?
Well, interestingly enough, a week ago we were doing some research into the definitions of interfaith and multifaith, and I think that there has been a collective thinking that interfaith represents Christians, Jews, and Muslims, but when you really look up the definition, it goes across all faiths. Multifaith is what Odyssey is. It's an organization which, if you have a faith tradition, you can be a member. It used to be calling it, and it still officially is called, the National Interfaith Cable Coalition. And at one point in its history, it represented Christians, Jews, and Muslims. But in the last years, it has opened itself up to all faith traditions. And when I think of all faith traditions, I think of multi-faith. And I'm hoping that people will think of interfaith as being all faith traditions also.
Leads me to the other question, and I'd love to ask you all about this. How many of you consider yourself religious? Okay. Just how many consider yourself spiritual? It's interesting. Some people raising their hands both times, but it's very interesting context in terms of how we approach this whole space, right? Because there's a big need, I think both Matt and Patton could speak to, for spirituality content, but the religion label takes on a connotation that's sometimes negative for folks. So there's a challenge to speak the right language for the right audience, and within each of those audiences there are incredible nuances. So when you're working in this space, Adrian, why don't you speak to that a little bit for Interfaith Youth Corps and their interest in also bringing the secular humanist community to the table in this.
Sure. I think for a long time, I think when you're sort of developing a discourse around something like interfaith, with the word faith in it, you look immediately to faith communities, right? But that sort of runs the risk of creating a division between non-religious communities and sometimes spiritual communities and people who identify strongly with a specific faith. And we've been really intentional, especially over the last few years, about trying to make sure that the language is cohesive and open and welcoming to people who aren't religious. I happen to fall into that category. I think as it relates to technology, I think probably 2 weeks after I started at Interfaith Youth Corps, I was Eid started, which is a Muslim celebration, and I put on my Facebook wall, Happy Eid, right? Because I learned a little more about it. I thought it was pretty cool, and I'd written, Merry Christmas who knows how many times, but all of a sudden I had friends writing on my Facebook wall under that post, are you converting to Islam? And I realized that I needed to, in a personal way, define what it meant to be a non-religious person, and also in a professional way, we needed to find where those ties were in terms of interfaith literacy, but also in terms of how people feel comfortable defining themselves and sharing that with other people.
So as you can imagine, it makes it kind of fascinating on a daily basis to look at social media posts and the nuance of how people are speaking about different things in their different faith traditions. A surprising aspect of this work, which is constantly changing. I want to bring back Patton and get Paul into the conversation when we start to talk about advertisement in the faith space. Pathos is a for-profit entity, and you're looking to monetize content. So Are advertisers afraid to talk about religion and faith? Are they better talking about spirituality? Where does the charged kind of conversations that happen online scare folks? And what about controversy?
Well, the answer to your first question is that, yes, they are scared of being associated with religion media. It's very difficult for sales teams of these organizations to have conversations about advertising unless you're talking to, if you're making Christian content and you're trying to get Christian seminaries or book publishers to advertise, that's obviously quite simple. But when you are dealing with just sort of more generic conversations about religion with a demographic that is religiously diverse, it's much harder, and they're nervous about it.
So give us an example, if you're comfortable with that, of a corporate client that you went to for advertising that had some pushback or some concern.
So I'm an editor, and so I just hear about battle stories from sales teams. But when I was at BeliefNet, when it was an independent company based in Manhattan that was kind of like Pathos, multi-faith, and traffic grew to about 4 million uniques a month, close to 20 million page views a month, and so sizable enough to recruit major advertisers. And BeliefNet had some success in that area, but it was always very difficult to talk to, say, Ford or Dove Soap. Those are the two that I remember, and I'm not demonizing either one of those companies with this. And it's sort of understandable. They would always come to us with concerns that people would they didn't want Dove Soap, an image of Dove Soap, to be associated with a blog or an article that was talking about, say, the religious aspects of abortion, and because they just sort of see it as negative, and didn't want their product to be associated with that kind of negativity. In general, it's difficult because the religious conversation in our country is so stupidly polarized, and religion has become so heavily politicized and seen as only sort of indicative of these kinds of very charged political conversations, cultural war conversations, when obviously religion content is much, much more than all that. But that is the reason that advertisers had a hard time with us at BeliefNet, and we're having the same issue at Pathos.
So it does happen, though, Pat. We put this slide up there, I think, to show the United Connect there. How does that work quickly, if you can explain to us, when you have a conversation or your folks have a conversation and talk corporate advertisers through the concerns they have, and then are there outcomes that they're pleasantly surprised by once they actually jump in?
Yeah, numbers speak, right? And so if we have multiple millions of page views a month, and we just emphasize that traffic, then that sort of helps us get a long way. And in the two cases I described earlier with Ford and Dove, all the tension was up front. The resistance was initial, like not once they were already advertising. Once they're advertising, it sort of goes away, and they find that it isn't a problem. It doesn't hurt their brand. We have a large contingent at Pathos right now of Muslim women, because we have some fairly prominent Muslim American women bloggers who are writing about being Muslim American moms and raising their kids in their neighborhoods and trying to be good Muslims, and but they need Dove soap and they need shoes, and they are sort of, again, like I was saying earlier, just like everyday people in every other way, except for that when they want to go online, they want to talk about this aspect of their lives. But that doesn't make them, and should not make them, unavailable to these advertisers. And so, again, once the advertising begins to happen, we sort of cross that initial hesitation, I do think that it always goes well. I can't think of a case where after the advertisement campaign has begun where we've had a bad experience with the client.
Great. Paul, let's get you into the conversation, and I'm going to throw up a slide here to speak to your work with Digitara. You have a lot of fantastic big corporate clients. Why work with nonprofits like Interfaith Youth Corps, and how is it different, in process, trying to deliver best practices and the best creative?
All right.
Well, I think it gives our company a little bit of diversity and gives people that work within our company something to kind of put a little more passion behind. I know that we have another client called Invisible Children, and so that's a nonprofit as well. And so, you know, the messaging and the values of Interfaith Youth Corps and, let's say, Invisible Children, you know, people can really stand behind it in a different way. You know, it's a lot different than Al mentioned, you know, let's say you're working with Ford where you're selling cars versus you're selling, you know, people and values and just, you know, just such different messaging. So as far as process is really not that much different. We don't address Interfaith Youth Corps and how we get to know you guys any different than the way that we get to know Dove Soap or, you know, NFL football or Taylor Guitars up here. We kind of go through the same process. The thing that is sometimes a little challenging is just really making sure that you understand your audience. And that's the most important thing because, you know, the audience with religion or any kind of faith base, there's just so many more sensitivities behind it. So it's not like, again, selling golf clubs where, you know, I mean, actually, there might be a few golfers out there that don't get really upset if they see something wrong. But, you know, it's just not going to affect people the same way.
Great. So with another slide of some of your work here. The Invisible Children, which I'm sure most of you have heard about with the Kony 2012 video, NFL, some other things. Any similarities of experience in trying to develop, you know, best product or... Is there an agency approach, and when you find folks within perhaps nonprofits that understand an agency approach, does that make it easier for you or easier for the team at Digitari to really both be inspired creatively mm-hmm. in the work that they do, so to be able to work on a project like that, but also that to then maybe raise the bar in where you want to go with that work?
Yeah, I think it absolutely kind of gives people more inspiration. You know, when you're possibly saving lives in another country, or you're just basically, you know, with your organization, you're just bringing people together and you're inspiring people through an important message. It absolutely, I think, fuels a much deeper passion amongst the team. I know just with our design team, you know, we just put in countless hours of our own free time just to make sure that what we were doing was just above and beyond what we even thought that we could possibly do for the brand. Not that we don't do that for other brands, but it's just something that you just put a little extra time in, I think a little extra love in. So, yeah.
So I want you to speak a little bit to how to address authenticity for especially faith-based clients, because the challenge of not coming off too slick, I think, is very real. Talk a little bit about that for us.
Right. It's important to understand your audience, and that's the real research that we do is understanding our audience. We really take the time to listen to, you know, our clients and hear what they have to say, and then spend our own time truly getting to know who we're speaking to, and in this case, a very young audience for the most part, very similar audience that we deal with Invisible Children. It's pretty much a lot of the same people. So we were able to kind of lean on that a little bit as well. We were also able to lean on some of the research that we did for BeliefNet. And that having that in sort of our back pocket made it definitely a little bit easier to kind of dig that information back up and really get to know that particular audience and that research that's specific to it. But as far as similarities or anything like that, I know one of the hardest things that we found out was color. Color is such a sensitive thing in so many cultures and faiths. And so having to do countless hours of making sure that, you know, this shade of red or this shade of blue or whatever isn't going to offend anybody. And so, again, we are able to really lean on our belief net research and be able to find a particular color palette that really resonated with everybody.
We're going to let Paul talk a little bit more about that. Did you have a quick question?
Yeah.
So the question was on authenticity.
Yeah.
And you just gave one example. What are other things that you saw as commonalities that people perceived as inauthentic?
Good one. It's actually something that Dan had mentioned. The number one thing we didn't want to do is come across too polished. We couldn't, you know, the brand itself couldn't, you know, feel corporate. And whenever, well, IFYC's original brand, in the way that they had it set up for quite a few years, it, you know, it was warm. It was, you know, it definitely felt a little homegrown. But one thing that, one of our challenges was to kind of really give it a refreshed look and, but not make it too polished. So some of the things, just making sure that it was going to be authentic, was just the design language, with especially typography and photography was a big thing. We didn't want photos that looked like they were pulled from like Getty Images or anything like that. You know, it couldn't look like it was from an ad. It needed to feel like Adrian took the photo. She's taken a lot of, actually most of the photos for IFYC, right? Just about all of them. So she just had a wealth of, you know, just of resources to be able to pull from. And we worked with her really closely on trying to find the right type of angles and people and just the diversity of people. And I would say the photography was probably one of the biggest things that really helped make it as authentic as possible. And then, you know, giving the photography an actual special look also added to that authenticity. So we took a lot of photos, and you'll see throughout the site and a lot of stuff that we've done, most of it's black and white. And I think that just from a visual language, it makes it feel a little more kind of like it's I don't know if this is the right word or if it's even a word or not, but journalistic, is that a word?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah, it just felt more authentic by treating it more like black and white, and, you know, kind of giving it a little kind of grungy flair to it.
We're gonna let Paul unpack the design stuff a little bit more. Another question here too, so that's a great question.
Okay, can I add something?
Sure, absolutely.
The only other thing I would add to that along the lines of authenticity is something that we bump up against a lot is identifying people correctly, right? Because when you're talking about where you're coming from and where sort of your passion comes from, you want that to be as accurate as possible in a space like this. And one of the things that we didn't want to do, and, you know, challenges that we come up against and, you know, crunch time when you're trying to throw something together, is you don't want to take random person A from a stock photo or random person B and C from a random event you did and say, okay, this person's Buddhist and this person's Sikh. You know, and so we have to be really intentional about who we're taking pictures of, and you know, I mean, obviously photo permissions come along with that, but also making sure that they're comfortable being identified in that way, that, you know, in a, from a visual representation standpoint, that we can show that either in a way that people are like, yes, I know who that person is and I know where they're coming from, or wow, that really surprises me, I wouldn't have assumed that that person is coming from that background. So it's something that we deal with a lot.
So we're going to move into some social strategy stuff here. Before we do, Matt, you want to add anything from Odyssey's perspective of ad buys or ad challenges that you guys are facing briefly?
Well, I think it's one of the things that we do is that we've established a syndication network of sites that we distribute our content to. And one of the things that we've had to do is work with the sites to help them understand that we come from a interfaith, multi-faith background, that we do things that are news-related, topical, but not of the time, but not of the moment, and that we are balanced in what we do, because the word faith frightened away the syndicators, and it took us a long time to break through and to make the relationships so that we could actually have the distribution, so that at some point somebody could attach advertising to our pieces. We syndicate two different kinds of pieces. One are our topical pieces, and one of them are our inspiration and spiritual library. And both of those have been hard to get the sites to accept. Once they do and get beyond it, it's okay, but it's the initial conversation which often is difficult. very similar to what you're doing with advertisers. The initial conversation is the one where you have to overcome the objections.
So faith and social media, wonder if a lot of you have seen this analogy at South By, the donut Instagram shot where people are giving an overview of what social is. I think Adrian put this together because she knows how much I love donuts, actually. But I'm going to let her speak to this in kind of a broad strategic perspective, and then we're going to move into what's really happening in this space with some of the religious audiences via Facebook and so forth. So Adrian, why don't you kick us off here?
Sure. So obviously for any social strategy, you have to evaluate your platforms. This is something we're all familiar with. You want to know who's where, why they're there, and how you can get to them. And I think that this, this picture initially that went around and went viral did a good job of just sort of quickly saying, here's what's happening in these spaces. And it's a good way to start digging down a little bit more into separate audiences. Okay, where's my audience and what are they doing in those spaces? And I think my favorite was the Instagram. This is a vintage picture of a donut, maybe just because I like things that look vintagey. But I also have an Android, which means I don't have Instagram. And the reason I'm saying that is just sort of general messages that we convey and the choices that we make on social platforms, right? So we're saying as an organization, we're open and accepting of everything and everyone. So we choose a social platform where not everybody is. Is that a good choice? So we're not on Instagram, and that's one of the things that has come up in conversation. It's not huge. It's obviously a very interesting, space, and there are cool things happening, and it's very, very social. But we want to make sure that we're conveying the right messages through the platforms that we're using. That said, Facebook is huge for us, and everybody. Twitter is sort of our largest growing space, and we push most of our videos out on YouTube. If I dig down a little bit to sort of start to answer the question of what's different for us in working to try and engage people by their religious or non-religious identity online, I'd say that the support for that space is a dual support. It's one that requires support for community issues. So I identify as an atheist. What's happening in my community, to my community, revolving around them that I want other people to be interested in. And then the sort of shared issue piece, which is, I care deeply about equal access to education. We're trying to touch on lots of different things, but I think a good example of this was when Lowe's pulled their ads from All American Muslim. It was the Florida Family Association that said All American Muslim was pushing an Islamic agenda and that advertisers should pull their ads. We saw an amazing sort of bubbling up in our community around that issue, where we had evangelical Christians, atheists, Buddhist communities basically start to push out the article, saying something about this doesn't feel right. I don't identify as Muslim, but I think we should support this community. That turned into people making strong statements about how they felt about that and why they felt that way from their personal background. It turned into Google Plus Hangouts, then conference calls, and eventually some really sort of targeted letters. But it's a strong example of how people are saying, this is your community, but I'm going to understand what's happening there and connect with it. And then at the same time, those bonds are much stronger, and they're able to work on things like environmentalism and fighting homelessness in a really effective way.
So that's a great answer to the customization piece. The other fun part in working with Adrian on this is we're constantly looking at what the new social applications are, right? And trying to decide, is it the right time to jump on board and utilize that? Very briefly, we had a Ning platform before the launch of our new site, and we determined it was not effective. So we went to a fully integrated approach with Facebook and Twitter, and it's been very successful, I think. And now I know Adrian's looking at Pinterest, and she's looking at possibly LinkedIn for our faculty network and so forth. So there's a strategic element of when to jump on board from a high level, and then the customization piece. I'm going to move to Patton to talk about specifically, here's the new timeline of I Love Jesus with 3.5 million followers, or likes, I should say, sorry. Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on Facebook, I guess specifically with religious communities and so forth.
Yeah, so we are as interested in, we develop our own Facebook community for Pathos in general, as well as for every channel, you know, like a Muslim Pathos and a Catholic Pathos, and so on Facebook and Twitter. But we're just as interested in existing communities in these social in the social web that are already flourishing, and figuring out how to work with them in a variety of ways. One is to come up with deals with them to, as they send their updates, to link to our site from time to time and drive traffic. I know BeliefNet has done this with I Love Jesus, and it now accounts for 40% of their traffic, or at least it did last month. So it's a huge, it can be a huge source of traffic. There is similarly an I Love Allah Facebook group that is one of the top 20 Facebook groups in the world, and we're talking to them right now about a similar deal. I just checked this morning before I came to see what was happening. Of course, these numbers change every day, every hour. But the number one highest rate of engagement on Facebook as of this morning is a page called Dios es Bueno, which is obviously a Spanish language. It's sort of a Jesus fan or God fan page. And it was getting higher rate of engagement this morning than Justin Bieber, which is also a very religious Facebook page, by the way, as, as Mr. Bieber has become increasingly sort of vocal about his faith convictions. But in any event, they had something like 47,000 comments. And I don't know in how many days it's taken to get that number, but that's maybe that's the last 24 hours. And this is run by this Arizona businessman who likes to inspire people with sort of God statements. And he's got this something he does on the side, and it's got he's just got this huge engagement. Again, most engaged page on all of Facebook right now. The number he had 47,000 comments. And the number three site this morning had something like 18,000. So it's, you know, sort of many orders higher.
Is that surprising to you guys?
I'm sorry?
Is that surprising at all to this audience, that those are real numbers, hard data, about how religious folks are playing out on Facebook? It's interesting to me, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fastest growing, in terms of just rate of increase this week, page on Facebook is the Invisible Children page. And then if you've been following the Kony 2012 news, then you know why. But that's something that is not, they don't foreground religion, but it is run by a group of evangelicals, and evangelical investment is kind of behind that organization. So they're driving a lot of traffic, I'm sure, to your page now. Let's see. And then the top page in terms of most talked about pages on Facebook this week is one called Jesus Daily. 23,000 comments on their last post this morning at 8:30 a.m. So and I checked at 10:30, so in 2 hours they had 23,000 comments. And so it's just increasingly sort of popular. It's, you know, anytime you check sort of top 10, top 20 worldwide pages on Facebook, you'll see, in addition to Gaga and Bieber and soccer stars are huge on Facebook, but in that mix and often in front of that mix are various religious pages. There's a huge, two or three huge Bible ones run by this Australian guy. So we talk to these people off and on about, you know, the overlap between their community with ours and how we might work together. And, you know, one strategy, like the one I mentioned with BeliefNet and that we want to use with I Love Allah, is to just let them link to our material to drive traffic from their sort of fan page to Pathos, which obviously improves our page view count every month. But additionally, we're just interested in letting them, sort of keeping them on Facebook. A lot of them don't want to leave. A lot of increasingly people ignore links on Facebook that drive them off of Facebook. They want to kind of stay and have the full content experience in the stream. And so we are kind of putting our content directly on there. Just letting them know sort of about who we are, especially if we have premium content like upcoming webinars or ebooks and that sort of thing. And that can be, I think, going forward, definitely will be a very rich form of engagement for our audience.
It's very interesting stuff. Thanks, Ben. We're going to move on to the marketing aspect of this conversation. And the question, I guess, for Matt is, how does awareness of self-identified religious people relate to achieving success to marketing to them? So why don't you have a couple slides you want to speak to here, I believe.
Well, yeah, there are. Odyssey is an interesting organization in that we do a variety of things with our content. And one part of our organization is actually a production company which produces things for commercial television. Up in the upper left-hand corner is a poster which is a program that we did for the Oprah Winfrey Network called Serving Life in conjunction with Forrest Whitaker. He was executive producer of it. To the right of it is our mobile presence, because we have a very robust mobile presence where we're reaching out to people through mobile. We have a web presence. We have social media where we're out in Twitter and Facebook, and we're, in fact, in the process of enhancing our Facebook presence because of the same things the patent said, and that people are living in the stream of the Facebook experience, and we want to continue them there, so we're building up our presence on Facebook. And then we also have, we are in the initial stages of building up a very robust syndication system where we're now syndicating out to, in addition to ourselves, about 25. And you might just want to, this slide looks a little bit like the subway system of London or Tokyo, but it traces through what we do with our content and how it gets out to people. And there are about 25 various sites which are both member sites and our commercial sites that we syndicate our content out to on a daily basis. And we have three kinds of content that we deliver out, one of which is member content. We also are doing, last year we produced about 350 short form pieces, which we have syndicated out both to our mobile platform, Call on Faith, and to this great, to our own website, and to this entire almost unreadable slide. But all of those represent places that we are syndicating content to, some of which are commercial sites where we can get advertising attached to them and therefore make some money. We've made a little bit of money, like about $600 so far this year. But, you know, it's something. And then we also have our inspiration and spiritual content, which goes out, in which we are seeking to speak to the people who are spiritual but not religious. Because about 16% of the country in surveys identifies themselves as spiritual but not religious, but we've done about 100 surveys and focus groups over the last 3 years in which within those surveys and the focus groups, 90% of people have identified themselves as spiritual but not religious. And so we're using our inspirational content to reach out to them.
Matt's also wrestling with the reality of having an app and putting a lot of strategy behind the app, and many of you folks in the room know that the app landscape is very dynamic right now, so if you want to talk to him about that in detail afterwards, he'd be happy to discuss that with you, I think. I want to check time here. We started a little bit late. Anybody have huge burning questions? Because we've got a couple other things we want to get through, but I want to make sure you have time to... Yes, sir.
And it goes just what you were saying, and it makes me think of Randy Wilson's talk yesterday, where he said we need to de-lamify spirituality, and I'd never looked at it that way before. I'm constantly thinking about how to reclaim religion. But I think that as spirituality becomes more mainstream, that term is actually losing some of its teeth. And I wonder if any of you have encountered, you know, that kind of issue about how can we give meaty content to those that are on a spiritual journey that has significance to them.
Patton, you want to try
sure.
that first?
Good question.
Yeah,
that is a good question. It's difficult to answer, partly because it's very alive for us. We're trying to figure that out. I mean, I'll tell you the approach that we're taking now, which is to not shy away from the complexity and the depth of discrete religious traditions, and to sort of let our contributors draw on those resources and all their complexity. So that means using sacred texts in media. It means sort of not being shy about the density of some of this information. I'll tell you that when I was at BeliefNet, there was a strategic decision that was made to shy away from religion and to sort of foreground more generic spirituality. Partly was because of this, these initial phone calls with advertisers that was so difficult. So we made a choice. I'm not going to say we because I really don't want to own it, but there was a choice that was made to at least make the homepage spiritual but not religious, which really just meant inspirational. It meant top 10 ways to pray, top 10 ways to have angels in your car, like that kind of stuff is what advertisers were more comfortable with. And it meant that, at least in the homepage, we, and sort of as a matter of branding, we're not able to go deep with actual sort of discrete religious content. And I think overall, it hurt BeliefNet. And so we're at Patheos sort of going in the opposite way and just being upfront. And what we find there is that people sort of take care of themselves. Like if you provide them, if you provide, say, we're building our Muslim channel, so we're providing them with not light Muslim, but just sort of straightforward Muslim content. And people tend to navigate their way through it. Even if they, you know, we don't necessarily know what sort of spiritual path they're on, but they, I guess, sort of figure out how to sink their teeth into that stuff and make use of it. And this is true for, we find, for our Muslim audience, for our evangelical Catholic audience, and on down the line. Does that answer your question?
Great.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what we're attempting to do is to continue to do research and try to reach out to people and look at the research that's been done by people like Pew and other places so that we can begin to get our fingers on the pulse of how the conversation is changing, because the conversation is changing.
I want to give Paul a chance, if you don't mind, to walk through some of the design stuff for you guys, which he did, and he can do that as quickly as he wants. We're at about
we can go through. I know there's a couple of questions out there.
And so I definitely want to get back to the questions. So
right.
Steer me through this, Paul. Here's the initial slide of the new IFC logo. You know, how much research, you spoke about this a little bit, how did you and Adrian collaborate on this process to get to not only a new website but a new brand kind of identity for IFYC?
Sure. I'll kind of, because we've actually touched on a little bit of the research already, so I don't want to kind of again, you know, we were able to kind of pull from some of our previous clients and things like that. I would say one of the things that we did approach that was a little bit different was we were able to do a more unique kind of focus group within even our own company. People that were really interested in this project, we were able to talk to them about, you know, what are the, you know, what's your faith? And, you know, if you go to a church or whatever you do, you know, how is the visual language of either your faith or, you know, whatever you believe or not believe in, what are you seeing out there from a visual perspective? And one thing that not only did we define up front with IFYC is we really wanted the brand to be very action-oriented. We wanted the brand to feel very unified. And also another one was it needed, again, to be very authentic looking and bold, because it needed to have that visual quality that you look at it and it's something that could visually stand out no matter where it's being seen. So, you know, T-shirt, poster, website, you know, all these different mediums, it really needed to be bold and stand out and simple. So just looking at, you know, the previous slide and everything that we were looking at with the mark itself, you see it, and it is a very bold mark. You know, we bring it, we spell it out down at the bottom with kind of a very simple sort of speaking kind of speaking bubble kind of thing. And we also chose, like we mentioned, different colors and everything that were very fresh and that were, you know, culturally and also faith-based sensitive. So I think it ended up being a very unique and satisfying mark for the brand. So speaking about how we collaborated, it was a very kind of passionate and involved collaboration from the very beginning. We went out to Chicago to their headquarters and spent quite a few days out there with them. We spent very close dialogue during the entire process of the branding and throughout the rest of the execution of everything else that we were doing. So it was a constant dialogue with Adrian and the rest of the team, and and just bouncing ideas off of each other and making sure that we are keeping our brand values in check throughout the entire process.
I would say that's an ongoing conversation, too, that we're delighted to be having with Digitaria as we continue to evolve the website. It resulted in a Webby nomination this year in the religion space, which we're very excited about. I think Digitaria was, too, so we're happy to share that. Here's the homepage.
And something, you know, you look at the homepage again, it needed to feel inspiring. That was another big word on our brand values. And since, you know, since the homepage is... We wanted the content itself to be very simple, you know. It's, but we really wanted to drive inspiration, and so that's one of the reasons why it's a very simple, large kind of responsive homepage where, depending on your browser site, you know, it all kind of scales and all that good stuff. But every single slide on the homepage that revolves, it's very visually action oriented, and I believe it's very inspiring. Each category within the homepage.
I'd add to that that one of the things that we moved away from was a very brochure-like site, which was like, these are the different things that we do within our organization. These are the things you could get involved in if you dig into them and find out what we're doing. This was a very forward-facing change. So the categories that we have, you know, people to identify with are, you know, a student or I'm new to interfaith, et cetera, et cetera. But what it did was it asked people to identify who they were when entering the site, and in that way, it very much sort of through branding and through visual elements and through our copy sort of asked people to start asking those questions as they traveled through our site and the content that we're making available.
I think I would add to that too. Obviously, very proud of the design work. It's pretty stunning stuff. The colors, the visuals. We think I think the UX had a lot to do with this as well. And this is one of Digitaria's great strengths to meld those two for clients. So. We have found a lot of folks finding what they need, getting to resources, and a lot of comments on how they're able to move through this site in a really dynamic way. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple other pages we can move through quickly. Adrian, you want to speak to both this and the ILI page? So the better get of the page in terms of the map.
Yeah, so I mean, this is just a page where we launched a campaign specifically for students called Better Together, where we're asking students to really come together and hit those three components that I mentioned earlier, which is to voice, engage, and act. We wanted to enable students in a sort of do-it-yourself capacity, be able to come to this page, say, I'm part of the movement, put their campus on the map digitally, and use our toolkits to be able to run our campaign on their campus.
I'll move quickly here. Because we started a little bit late. Here's the Interfaith Leadership page that you all can see and go to the site.
And also, one thing I want to mention is working with any new brand development, consistency is such an important factor. And I think that was one of the one of the biggest successes that we had was this strong visual consistency throughout everything that we were doing, not only online but offline through the brand, and giving IFYC the tools to be able to continue to extend that consistency with everything they do.
Thanks, Paul. We had one last slide here that Adrian can speak to, but I want to leave the rest of the time for questions for you all, and we're all happy to speak to you after this session as well. You want to tee this up in terms of the infographic and the civil engagement piece, Adrian?
One of the pieces we pulled together was an infographic, very compelling piece of content for our audience to say, hey, when you come together, this is what you can do. These are the issues we can solve in the world. And we've talked to you a little bit about that, so we won't go into it. But I think sort of when we're talking about millennials and collaborative impact and the possibilities there, I just sort of give you three bullet points. So we know it's a given when you're pushing out content that you should have short copy, that it should be well-branded, that it should be easy to share. I think when you're bringing in the interfaith piece and you want to start talking about stuff like this, I would add in the religion space that you should be able to acknowledge, sort of have the power of a naming. So I know who you are and where you're coming from. You know who I am and where I'm coming from. I think that's really important for content that you're pushing out. Acknowledge a sense of conflict, right? So I think Patton was talking about this a little bit, but on our blog, we ask students who are blogging for us and alumni to speak strongly from their perspectives. And so we have a, you know, caveat at the bottom that says, you know, the opinions in this blog do not necessarily reflect that of Interfaith Youth Corps. But that's something we have there so that students can really voice where they're coming from and have that identity, and that we're able to acknowledge that there. The last piece would be just to have a sense of humor around it where you can and where it's appropriate. So from a personal standpoint, I was, I tweet all the time, both for work and personally. So I was out by the Chevy lot, and I had some kind of meal in a bacon waffle cone. but I, you know, when tweeting about that, because that's a pretty awesome thing to tweet about, I also, you know, could make and did make sort of a humorous hashtag around not kosher or halal, you know. So just acknowledge those things in a light way as well.
All right. Thanks, Adrian. With the time we have left, love any Q&A. Again, we're happy to stick around for you afterwards. So I want to respect the time that the crew needs for the space itself. But anybody else want to take us through the end here? There was one question before. Or yes?
So, like, I work for a Christian nonprofit, and Christians can be jerks on the internet, and I don't want them to do that on my site. Mm-hmm. So how do you, like, do you just delete like crazy? Do you engage with those people and ask them to be respectful, or do you just, like, what does that look like when you're talking about engaging with those people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's taken on a couple of different forms on our site. We you know, tried to have comments on our blog. In reality, people just weren't commenting, so that was one of the reasons we took them down. We did have some volatile stuff, and I think it's probably more applicable on Facebook. I'd say the first step is to try and engage our community in conversation around that, if it's something that you can leave up that isn't just totally horrendous. Usually that comes in the form of pictures. So try and engage your community to have that conversation, because that's something that we're really trying to teach students to do and empower leaders in the community to do. And we sort of let it stand, but sort of insert an organizational voice in that capacity. And then, like I said, sometimes things just need to be taken down. But it isn't that frequent. I mean, in all honesty, Maybe once a month we're taking down something. So,
Patton, you want to speak to this quickly?
Yeah, we take things down quite a bit more, actually. and believe that we had 24-hour moderation. We had people who worked around the clock, taking in shifts, you know, and we don't do that at Patheos, partly because we the way we do blog recruitment is much more careful, and so we typically identify bloggers who seem to be very involved in their comments threads, and kind of doing moderation on their own, and people who have cultivated kind of a good, rich community and conversation, and who are, happy enough to be bold and ask someone to go away if they need to. And so we've chosen those bloggers. And so most of our bloggers do their own moderation. They do it well. We help them block IP addresses if need be, which is, no big deal to do. And so we have a policy that talks about respect, and a lot of the policy is just about not linking to porn and whatever else, just doing things that are wildly inappropriate. But there's also a kind of a high level of respect. We're fortunate in that we seem to have kind of plugged into this niche of students and scholars who come to our site, and so most of them want to kind of, have an exchange of ideas. Now, we do have bullies, to be sure, and we block them, warn them, and then, I think they get two chances or whatever, and then they get blocked.
Thanks, Patton. So our time has flown. I want to thank the panelists for coming together for this panel. I want to thank all of you for attending.